It's time to talk to Peter Allam, talking legal matters and passports for minors and the relevant permission. Peter, very good morning and welcome.
Yes, morning, Wayne. Morning to all the listeners out there. Lovely morning. The dolphins were playing early this morning and the whales were out there jumping, so spring is definitely in the air, and what a wonderful sight that is, of course.
Indeed, wow.
Our chat this morning is around that parental consent letter. In the old days, or not in the old days, a little while back last year, you could travel freely with your children, you know, if you were the guardian and that type of thing, but that was changed to, unfortunately, to parents with kids skipping the country, parents immigrating without the other parent knowing, and the problems that arose there. So it's very much so that it shows you that both parents play an important role with children, and you cannot do what you want to do with your child. Mm. You need the consent of the other party if you are indeed divorced, or if you, you know, even if it's a child born out of wedlock, you also similarly need that. Mm. So what you need is that there's a fixed form that's got to be filled in. It's called a parental consent letter. That's for all children under the age of 18. The query I had on that is that my daughter's 16. Why can't she make her own decisions? Mm. She doesn't know where her father is, and she wants to travel with me. Well, that's tough luck. Like I said to them, you better find where the father is. It was amazing that they then found the father. Mm. When I gave them the form, they were able to find him all of a sudden, but they thought they were going to move out of the country and off to New Zealand without his consent. So the form is quite straightforward. It says the name of the child, date of birth, whether they have a passport or South African ID, whether the child is a student, or, you know, to ask where the child is, what the child is, if they have a learning institution, at varsity, or something like that. As I say, this is for children under the age of 18. And then you've got to make sure that you stipulate who the child will be accompanied with, or let's say the 16-year-old is going over to New Zealand as an example. We will pick her up at the airport on the other side. You can't just go without, you know, having a fixed abode to go to. Mm-hmm. So the name of the person that will either accompany the child, be it the other parent, or we will receive the child outside of South Africa, needs to be filled in with full details, name, relationship, work address, residential address, contract numbers, and all the rest of it. If it's a South African that's going to be involved, you need that South African's ID or foreign national passport attached as well. Then the form clearly says who's the mother, full details of the mother. You need a copy of the mother's ID or passport. Likewise, the father, who is the father, full details of the father. In some instances, you have a legal guardian where maybe the parents have died when the child was young. So the legal guardian's appointment letter or a court order or ID, you know, that can be in terms of a will, it can be in terms of a court order that was got where there was a dispute. So in all of these instances, it's not just a case of filling in that's who the mother is. You have to prove who the mother is and have the necessary ID document or passport for those people. And then what do you need to attach to that application? That's an application that will go to, so be submitted to Home Affairs to get the necessary letter to travel. And it needs to be accompanied by a birth certificate of the child traveling, ID or passport of the person receiving the child itself, ID or passport, a court order where you've got a court order that perhaps awards the children. If the parents are dead or deceased or one of them deceased, you then need the death certificate of that particular party. And, of course, like I mentioned earlier, the ID or passport of the, both parents. And they need to sign and confirm that they consent. There's a place for them to sign a letter to say that they consent to the child's travel. And that must be attached to the application. So not easy as a young child to get out of the country these days without a full application and consent form from Home Affairs.
Right.
And, of course, when travelling, when going through, trying to get a board and that type of thing, yes, they're very strict on that and they require those letters properly stamped. If not, they'll turn you around and send you straight back home at your expense. Mm-hmm. So if you're travelling with a minor, even if you're going on holiday, you need to make sure that consent is there where both parents are not travelling with the child.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, most children under the age of 16 have a passport with the mother and father, you know, in one of those two names, and travelling together, there's no need for this form. But the minute you travel with one parent or the child is going somewhere on holiday or maybe to play sport overseas or maybe to go to college or university somewhere, you require that consent from the Department of Home Affairs.
Okay.
And
Peter, just a question, and this is sort of something that's just popped into my mind, was there not an incident of some sort involving a custody battle that kind of spurred this on? I'm not sure if I'm thinking of something that might or might not have happened, but somewhere in the back of my mind.
Spot on. There was the father that disappeared with his daughter. I think it was into Swaziland or overseas or something. Mm. That was the start of all of this. The mother had been ugly and didn't allow visitation rights, and that was one of the incidents that occurred that, you know, sorted this out.
Mm.
There was a court application over that to get the child back and all the rest of it.
Okay.
So, yes, it's from those sort of incidents where parents have ducked off, shall I say, because there's nothing, no other way of describing it. It was a child wrongfully, unlawfully, and illegally. That's why I always say, you know, like we spoke last week about maintenance and that, make sure you have a nice relationship. The fact that you as parent can't make it, don't let that hinder the child. You know, let the child grow up freely and loving both parents. I always say that.
That's
basically where we are with that one.
Well, interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
And Peter,
I also think that we just...
Carry on.
I said, I also just mentioned in our chat that we chat about whether or not somebody has the right to a view. There's a lot of that happening at the moment on our little East Coast where people are building homes in front of people and they seem to believe that their view cannot be blocked and they want to oppose plans and all the rest of it. Well, you know, it's currently in South Africa, there is no natural entitlement based on the ownership of the land to enjoy a view over and across the adjacent land in front of you or to the side of you. You know, the local authority gets attacked because they pass the plans and that. You've got no right of recourse against them.
Mm-hmm.
The position is quite clearly that neighbours do not have a right to be informed of or to have access to building plans or to object against them prior to approval. A lot of people think that they can go to the town planner and refuse the plans, but nothing to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
The plans are within the necessary national building regulations and standards. They will be passed. I'm not sure what section it is, but there's a section there that says that do neighbours have a right to the pre-sort of existing views, access to sunlight, and that type of thing. But it's not applicable. You don't have that.
Okay.
I think the town planners will avoid, you know, windows on sides looking directly into homes and that type of thing to a certain extent. In fact, your designer, architect, or plan drawer will, in mostly never ever include that where it's a direct view into somebody's home. They do try to avoid, I know that, but it's not compulsory. It's a matter of, you know, doing it out of the kindness of your heart. And yes, as a homeowner, that's what you should take into account. You don't want a situation where you got maybe steps going up into a double story house and a big window there and you look directly into your neighbor's yard because of that. So you also do need to be mindful But unfortunately, it's not the law.
Mm.
It's not cast in iron. It's just the way it is. I know that this was tested in Durban and tested in Cape Town. You know, the local authority are the people that have the right, and neighbours just don't have the right to enforce anything unless it's outside of the building rules and regulations.
I remember those cases. There were some high-profile cases, some very expensive properties, in fact. I think it was, one was, as you mentioned, in Durban, if I'm not mistaken, the Umhlanga area, and the other one down in the Western Cape along the Western Seaboard, where, I mean, you're paying, I'm guessing, millions per square meter almost. And, you know, somebody had their view taken away by a building going up in front of them, and there was all kinds of litigation on the go.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's there. Some of them have been instances where people have been, you know, you get a lot of people that build, then tell the builder add on. And a lot of those have led to the homes being demolished because they built illegally and the add-ons are not correct. So if you're building, be cautious, make sure your plans are properly passed, otherwise the person bringing in an application is going to be successful against you. And then, of course, the second aspect is just make sure that you are friendly with your neighbour and do consider your neighbour. That's all that I ask.
Yes.
You know, sometimes you can't avoid blocking the view because, you know, your site is such that you're building in front of somebody who's only behind you who has a wonderful view. So if you don't build a home under normal circumstances, you're not going to have a home because you can't build a home that's maybe 3 or 4 meters
underground
instead of the normal regulatory one that you're allowed. So you need to be very cautious in that regard that your plans are proper, and also you need to make sure that you, I'd say, communicate with your neighbour and just tell them what you're going to do. That's the noble thing to do. To say, look, this is what I'm going to do. I want to show you beforehand. Very sorry that I'm going to take your view away, but there's nothing else I can do. You know, sometimes you get neighbours that make plans to allow a little bit of view, move their home across slightly and that type of thing to leave a gap. Sometimes you get those neighbours that just come along and build. They feel absolutely nothing. So, yes, there is no right to a view, but good neighbourly relationships can go a long way to helping.
That's it. Just to discuss the situation and kind of find some kind of compromise. Maybe a different roof design, a slightly lower pitch, or any kind of compromise that might still allow a view past the new construction.
Correct.
Once again, interesting stuff. And, you know, the kinds of niggles, I suppose, that occur, especially when a lot of money gets invested in properties in scenic areas for the specific purpose of the scenery. And, you know, you kind of don't really want to lose that. But at the same time, as you say, Peter, the guy in front of you does have certain rights himself.
Yeah. You know, it's that same old story. When you're going to buy something, don't rush in and do it. We talk at Christmas time about people that come on holiday, enjoy the area, and then they want a home for themselves, not thinking. You get people from Joburg that come here to East London. They love it so much because it's a beautiful part of the coast, our little wild coast. And then they want to buy something. They rush in and they buy something. And then 6 months later, they realize, it's almost like a 12-hour drive from Joburg to East London. We come by plane, we've got no car, you know. What are we going to do with that home? How often don't we see people buying and selling within a year or two because it's a little white elephant? So don't rush in and do that. The same thing if you're buying property, make sure that if you're buying for a view, that you're going to retain that view, that there's not an open plot in front of you, you know, that's going to spoil your view. Especially where we are, out our way, that whole coast, there are a number of people that buy the vacant plots in front of them to avoid anything happening. That's a very common little sale that happens with our conveyancing department. We have sales, I would say we almost have one a month where people buy the plot in front so that nobody can develop in front of them,
yeah,
and they retain their view.
Just to retain the view.
At any given time, we've got a number of those.
I suppose that's the cleverest. If you do have the means to do it, then that would be the safest bet if you are investing in a view. Otherwise, you just need to be very, very good friends with potential neighbours.
Correct. And you also need to be careful. Don't think that if you buy the plot that you're safe, because you know some plots have a condition on it that
indeed,
it must be built within 2 years or something like that. So I suppose that's mainly where you're in a complex. But make sure you check, and that if you buy the neighbor's plot, that it's capable of being kept open for you.
I know
of a lot of people who have bought plots and then all of a sudden they've got to build within 2 years and they didn't want to build anything. Incident once where the person built a garage on the site, a low garage, and the people said, no. That is a house plot. You need to put a structure on it.
Yeah,
so
you need to put a dwelling
on
it.
Make sure you know what you're buying and what the conditions are.
And once again, that goes back to the argument that you always say is speak to an attorney, speak to your financial advisors for that matter.
Very, very much so. I mean, you know, little minor things. I have one at the moment where a guy's bought a plot and he thinks the neighbor's fence is extended onto his yard when he went to locate the pins.
Mm.
So check it beforehand.
Right. Well, all good points. And Peter, if somebody wants to reach you, we've covered a number of different topics today. How do they get hold of Alam's attorneys?
Okay, Facebook, Alam's, add a S to our surname, A-L-L-A-M-S. If you go onto Facebook, like us, you'll find all our details there. You'll find these lovely money chats with Wild Coast on there as well. And then, of course, we're situated at 6 Sansom Road in Vincent. Telephone 043-7211018. I'll repeat, 043-7211018. Little side street where Pep Stores is, Deborah Avenue, third house on the left.
Right.
I mean on the right.
On the right. You'll have people knocking on the wrong door.
Yeah.
Peter, thanks very, very much. Have a great week and we'll chat again next Monday.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks a lot. Cheers then. Peter Allam with today's Legal Eagle chat and some interesting topics there. And as he mentioned, the chat will be on the Allam's Facebook page and on our website, wildcoastradio.co.za.